Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. You look all berry brown. Where have you been?
Berry brown. Mm-hmm. I was at Siesta Key last week. Perfect weather all week, Lee.
Nice.
All week.
Just like here.
In the 80s, sunny.
Here it was like Seattle. It was awesome.
Great beach weather. So yesterday, I'm in line at the Vital Records office because I can't find my son's birth certificate.
Uh-oh.
I know I had it at one point, and I need it for insurance purposes.
Yes.
And somebody in line, there were a bunch of folks that spoke Spanish, decided I was a celebrity. I have no idea who they thought I was, but they were all coming up and asking for my autograph.
Nice.
Yeah, I think I should have worn a little stronger sunscreen. And maybe now they're mistaking me for some.
Who do people say you look like?
Never anybody. Usually, someone's cousin's best friend's sister. No. Never anybody
famous. Celebrity?
No, I have no idea who they thought I was, but it was kind of funny. Anyway, we've got a very full house this morning, so we got to get started, Lee.
Start it up.
All right. You know, we've got a lot of listeners that are thinking about investing. Even though the economy's not great, oftentimes people think about investing in homes or businesses, and we have a very unique company this morning. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Greenwood Land Company.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have Dan and Ann Webb with us, and they're here to tell us all about their unique concept. Tell us about Greenwood Land Company and how it got started.
Well, you know, the company got started, five years ago. Under similar circumstances. I was in the technology business. I had taken a beating in the stock market. I had a son who was 9 years old at the time. We were looking to find some way to invest our money in something where we wouldn't lose 30 or 40% a year, and looking for a way to go spend time together and find quality time as a family. And the more I looked at land, timberland, rural property as an investment vehicle, the more I came to realize that land ownership was an opportunity for us to spend time together and benefit financially. It was a quality of life and a financial decision. And at that time, there was nowhere for me to go to find the information. So I spent a lot of time scratching my head and trying to find the stuff out on my own, how to go about the process, because I truly didn't know anything about it.
Now, the land you're talking about is not for development, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the property that we specialize in is timberland. It's rural property. It's property out of the city. It's the country. It's kind of the thing that we all think of when we have these romantic notions of being in the country and hearing the birds sing. And that's the property that we've invested in. And what we started doing was investing in property that was either distressed or neglected, and we would find properties that had potential to be something beautiful, and we'd go buy them and heal them, repair them, invest time and money in them, and try to bring out the best in the properties.
I'm still a little unclear. Like, how do you choose the property and who owns it? Like, just people own just big swaths of land out there?
Yep. Well, land is owned by a lot of private individuals. There's a lot of institutional ownership. The timber industry is a very big industry in Georgia, and there's a lot of institutional ownership of timberland, just rows of pine trees in middle and south Georgia.
And so you buy it from them?
Yes, or the private landowners.
So they don't want it anymore?
Well, some do and some don't. The timber companies and the institutional landowners in Georgia go through a kind of a series of, they'll buy a lot of land for a while, and then they'll come to the conclusion that selling land is a good thing. So they'll get in and out of the ownership business.
Right.
And a lot of it depends on the grade of the timberland and its quality for growing pine trees, for growing a crop.
Right. Now, what do you use the land for?
Well, personally, the land that we own, we use as investment, and we get a lot of personal enjoyment out of owning it. My son and I hunt. Ann loves to go walk through the woods. We spend a lot of time at our place down in Harris County, just kind of getting away from it all. And I'll tell you, when we lived in Atlanta, having a place to get away was something that we coveted as a family.
Sure.
Now, do you survey the land for wildlife? I mean, do you look at the land and you talk about something that's neglected?
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through that process.
Well, for us, neglected property is property that either has been abandoned from a useful standpoint, from a utility standpoint, out-of-state owners, or property that is timberland that has been timbered or heavily timbered. And what we try to do is look at a piece of property from the standpoint of, how do we optimize this property from a forest resources standpoint? How do we make the forest products, the trees, the best they can be? we focus on aesthetics and on wildlife, maximizing the wildlife potential of property. So the process of evaluation for us is the process of looking at a property through those eyes and seeing property that has potential that it hasn't yet reached, and that we can have an effect in that process.
Is this something you buy and hold over long periods of time, or is this like kind of a trading investment?
Either. I'll tell you, we've got properties that we have bought and continue to hold, and we have properties that we've bought and in a relatively short period of time made a dramatic change and had on the market, and other people like any of us in this room looking for a great place in the country have bought.
Is that who typically buys it? Somebody who wants to have that lifestyle, not more of the timber industries?
Yeah, a little bit of both. You know, mm-hmm. we were talking before the show that the market for land ownership changes over time. A few years ago, it was recreational buyers out of Florida that were coming into Georgia to find rural property again because there just wasn't very much in Florida.
Right.
Now we see more of a swing back to investment-oriented purchases, people who've taken a beating in the stock market in the last year looking for alternative investment vehicles to give them some stability and some to hedge against.
But they're looking to put like their own place on it. You don't develop it at all. You just give them the raw land and they do with it whatever
they
like.
Right. Our goal is to take a piece of property and apply conservation-oriented management practices, best management practices to a piece of property to maximize it aesthetically, again, for the timber resources, the natural resources, and the wildlife of the property. Because I believe, absent a residential development or a commercial development, that's taking a piece of property to its highest and best use. And for us, in the beginning, our strategy was selfish. We felt like doing that enhanced the value of the property over time. And for us as business people, that was what we were trying to do, was to drive value of the property
right.
up
mm-hmm.
without driving its aesthetic appeal away.
But it's also helping the restoration of maybe some of the species that are there too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's our philosophy, is that land ownership and the responsible conservation-oriented stewardship of the natural resources is an undeniable way to achieve both your financial and quality of life goals. And that's
Absolutely.
Been our objective, is to do that for ourselves and through our consulting business to help other people understand how to do that for themselves too.
When I spoke with Ann on the phone, it was interesting. She talked about, you know, you can invest in a lot of things, but they're not making any more land, and it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making any more land, and
right.
and to find a nice piece of property, it's almost a legacy. It's something that if somebody invests in and puts a home on it, it's something they can hand down and for generations have that as an estate or as their property. Ann, can you speak to that a little bit? Because I just thought your opinion was very interesting on that, and your insight in the business is fascinating to me.
Well, you know, when we first started, I really didn't give any thought to owning or investing in property. And you're very correct, Amy, that it is a place that is something that we enjoy now. It's not just an investment but in money-wise, but it's an investment in our quality of life and what we enjoy. And looking down the road, you're right, it is something that we can hand down to generations. And we feel like that the property we own and the way we take care of it, it's also helping our conservation duties, that whatever I own isn't going to be developed in a way that's negative to our environment, that we're taking care of that, we're good stewards, and that we pass that down to the next generation, that we're teaching them how to do it as well. And it's been a great decision for our family. And Don can tell you that at first we have this story that we always tell people, and it's very true. He asked me one time, he said, "Do you think you'd ever like to own a little place in the country?" And I snapped back at him and said, "Why would I want to own another place? I can't even take care of our own house." And, you know, I was looking at it as more work, but it's not. It is work. You have to take care of things, anything that you own, whether it's a car or a boat or a piece of property. But it's something that not only our immediate family has benefited from, but our extended family and friends do as well.
Now, I know there's a lot of companies right now, big companies like Cabela's and big sporting companies that are buying up blocks of land. What makes you different from them?
Well, I think what Cabela's and a lot of the folks in the land business that at least we see on the internet are are oriented toward the brokerage process to, mm-hmm. to helping. There are people that invest, but Cabela's and their properties company is about land brokerage and using their brand to help smaller companies advertise property for sale, primarily to outdoor enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. Our strategy from the beginning was we wanted to be landowners and land investors. Over time, we developed a portfolio of services that we would offer other people, clients of ours. Mm-hmm. One of them happened to be brokerage, but it was all oriented at trying to take what we knew and apply it in a way that benefited as many folks as we could. And so our strategy from this point forward is to continue our land investing business and to continue mm-hmm. To continue our client services business, but also to try to take this process and this understanding and our philosophy and our point of view and try to get it in the hands of as many people as possible, because I believe that the more people that are actively involved in the land ownership process, the better it is for everyone. The mm-hmm. the environment's cared for. I truly believe that people benefit in a way that many can't even understand. I know we have. The benefits of land ownership for us have been far greater than I ever thought from a personal standpoint.
Can you talk a little bit about that first purchase? You went from technology, you had a corporate background.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then here it was, you've been researching this, you go, okay, I'm going to do this.
Yes.
And then it was time to do that first deal. And yes. So there had to be a little apprehension that, you know, is this the right thing? Am I doing this?
It was not apprehension, it was abject fear. I had no idea what I was doing. I was scared to death.
Right.
Nobody would tell me.
Right. There wasn't the manual, buy land manual.
No, there wasn't a buy land manual. And people who knew how to do it viewed me as competition, so they wouldn't
help you. Right.
They wouldn't help me. So what I had the philosophy that if other people could know how to do it, I could figure out how to do it.
Sure.
But I was very careful. I mean, Ann will tell you that in the beginning, we stumbled. We talked. We weren't certain at all. And finally, we just took the plunge and made an offer on a piece of property. But we were absolutely scared to death and weren't sure we had made the right decision. I will tell you that I walked away from the closing table going, oh, this was a huge mistake. We didn't know what we were doing.
Right. So, a little buyer's dissonance right after the fact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But in retrospect, I wish I had bought more at the time, because
it was an opportunity.
Absolutely. Right? It was an opportunity that I couldn't see. It was kind of a, you know, this diamond in the rough thing. I knew there was a diamond there. I just couldn't recognize it in the rough.
Right.
And,
sure.
And for us, it's like anything else, though. The first time you buy a house, you're scared to death.
Right.
You don't know what you're doing. And after
you're on that learning curve.
Right, right.
Interesting. Now, I understand there's some exciting news. There's some big news coming out with your company today.
There is. In fact, we issued a press release today announcing something called the Greenwood Project. And for us, this has been the culmination of a year's worth of effort for us taking our process and intellectual capital and our point of view and trying to package this in a way where other people can benefit from it. The Greenwood Project is a two-part initiative that involves this education component that we will be launching over the next 60 to 90 days through a new website called greenwoodproject.com, where we will be having audio CDs for sale. We will be doing podcasting, webinars, information to essentially tell people the process that we've gone through and help educate them to try to give them the thing that I so desperately wanted
right.
when I started out. And in addition to that, then we will be taking properties similar to the ones when we first started out. We will call them Greenwood Project properties, and we're going to seek neglected, damaged properties, and we're going to go take these properties and apply our philosophy. We're going to bring cameras along. We're going to document the process, and actually, in addition to telling, we're going to show this process where we'll take properties nominated by landowners. We've got investment partners that are going to be doing this too. So the Greenwood Project, which we announced today, will be rolling out over the next 60 to 90 days, is a process of bringing what we've taken 5-6 years to learn to market in a way that other people can benefit from it.
Excellent. There's a lot to know. Obviously, you've done a lot of research, and you have a team of professionals that work with you
that
help you out. And if any of our listeners are interested in knowing more about your company or the Greenwood Project, how can they reach you?
They can reach us online at www.greenwoodland.com, or they can call us. And what's the toll-free number?
It is 800-466-1163.
Excellent. We really encourage our listeners to check out the website. A lot of information there. And like any purchase, there's a lot to know. And if you can reduce that anxiety and go to the expert, it sure does help. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for
Thank
having
you.
Us.
Lee, I said we have a diverse show today, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Our next guest, Nick, I'm not sure, but when I looked at his resume, I thought he'd be like 60 years old. And he showed up. Yeah, he showed up, and he's 60. Like a young pup. Yes. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Nick.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
From No Limit Media Consulting. And at No Limit Media Consulting is an interesting company. When I was reading more about it, I was very intrigued by the diversity of your company. So tell us a little bit about No Limits Media.
Sure. When we started about a year ago, facing a tough economic climate, we began as a traditional PR firm. Just like everyone else out there, we were going out there and trying to get our clients, which are franchise-specific, in traditional media outlets such as USA Today, Wall Street Journal, even the AJC here in Atlanta. And very quickly, we started noticing a trend of newspapers going under. So we started developing kind of a social media campaign that is kind of the future of where PR is going, where the media is going. Rocky Mountain News, a longtime newspaper in Denver, gone. Now what's next? So we started identifying what's going to be next in PR, what's going to be next in communications, and using it to drive leads for our franchise concepts.
So what's next, Nick?
Social media is going to take off. Clients of ours that aren't on social media, I'm pushing them on there. We've developed a campaign to get them on there, such as Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Blogger, that can go even deeper into Ning, where you can create your own social network. The idea is that you can use these free outlets to promote your business. It costs a ton of time. That's all it costs. There's no startup fees to get on Facebook. It's a matter of marketing your business differently, especially in a tough economy where you can connect with consumers in their personal space.
I'm starting to get on board with social media.
Yeah,
it's taken
been a slow
me a while.
Process.
Yes, we actually have a show coming up in April for our listeners all about social media, for those that aren't even sure what that term means. But, Nick, you came here from Chicago. I'm curious to know, what do you see different in business from Chicago to Atlanta?
Well, for No Limit, the reason we started here is basically this is the capital of franchising. There are millions, seems like millions of franchise concepts based here. So we decided that this was the place we had to start. There was no communications firm focused strictly on franchising based in Atlanta. So we moved here for a competitive advantage. It worked out great. We represent clients in Denver and New York and California, but the majority of our accounts are here. And one of the big things that we've always pushed is the ability to have these direct relationships, these personal relationships with our clients, where we can really get inside their concept and help them promote it properly so that they can franchise better, so that they can reach consumers stronger. And that relationship, that hands-on, that boutique feeling, we don't need a million clients. We need the right ones. So we've been very selective. And the good thing is, in Atlanta, the business community is so strong, and the network is incredible that very quickly we got our name out there, and No Limit was up to over 10 accounts within the first year and cash flow positive. Could we have done that in Chicago? Probably not. There's not enough concepts. Our business wouldn't have fit in that marketplace.
Now, what challenges do franchise owners have that a typical business doesn't have?
Oh, right now, financing. You can't get it. There's no financing out there. Concepts are changing. One concept that you guys are going to be talking to, I guess, in a few weeks, Clicks Portrait Studios. They're Atlanta-based. This is a good example. They looked at their model. They're an upscale portrait studio, a little higher investment, and said, okay, how do we capture some of the entrepreneurs who aren't going to find financing for a brick-and-mortar location? They adapted their concept to now be an events-orientated concept. So you can work out of your home. They added a home-based element to it so that you could technically finance it on your credit card. Financing is tough, but now is the time to get into franchising because real estate is available. You can negotiate incredible leases. So if you can afford it, this is where it's a great opportunity to get into business for yourself. One of the interesting things about it is really the concepts that are thriving right now are the ones that are going after these high-level entrepreneurs. Those are the ones who are taking off right now, which makes it difficult for people who want to leave their day job. They're sick of reporting to a boss because the financing is gone. The people who are getting it are the ones who already have the millions. It's kind of this I mean, it's a horrible time for franchise concepts. But that's why it's time to innovate and go online and use these outlets to really promote and market your business.
So what kind of publicity do you get for your clients? Is it kind of that event base where you create like a big event, or is it just like the day-to-day,
sure,
this is what we do kind of PR?
Well, all the PR we do for our franchise concepts is geared at driving franchise leads. So part of it is the traditional side, part of it the social. On the traditional side, my great team back at No Limit, we've secured 2 Inc. interviews and a Wall Street Journal interview in the last week. Now, those are the interviews that are going to result in features that are going to help grow their brands, their national publications. Now, when those things run, sure, they'll have a life online, but that's about it. The value is lost after a daily newspaper runs it or a magazine runs it and it gets thrown in the trash. So now what we're doing is the next step of PR is taking it into the social outlets. So, for instance, you guys had Stan Friedman from RetroTax on here, who's a avid blogger. He's blogging once a week. Now, when Stan is in a magazine, if we book him an interview, it runs, we can take that magazine article, post it on his blog, and he can post his opinions as of current. So an article that came out a year ago, he can now re-merchandise, add value to it, and it's all searchable because that text is sitting there on his blog.
Interesting.
So it's mixing traditional and social to come up with a stronger method for driving franchise leads, especially in this economy.
Wow, you just said it. I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. I was curious as to what your different twist was, and that really does explain it. I know your clients are very diverse, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, going from Huddle House to then a wireless company, that's pretty diverse. But do you find that the business models are similar in dealing with all businesses?
Well, it comes back to the financing. Mm-hmm. A Huddle House is going to be a little higher level investment than a Clicks Events franchise. So the difference is usually in the cost and definitely the industry. For instance, dealing with a wireless cell phone company, you're dealing with a different beast than dealing with a restaurant concept. But socially, you can both concepts have a great life online in Twitter, on MySpace, on Facebook. A lot of concepts see these as strictly, okay, you're going to interact with consumers. But because of the SEO value of these high activity sites, instantly your brand can get great recognition online where you're promoting your franchise opportunity through the help of your consumers. So service brands and restaurants together in social media can do exactly the same thing. Separately, you see all these differences, but in social media, they can really use it as a tool to drive leads for their business on the franchise and consumer sides.
Gosh, there's a lot to know, definitely a lot to know. If folks want to learn more about your business, how can they reach you?
Definitely read my blog. It gives some good ideas on how to grow your business in this tough economy by using social media. That's thefranchiseblogger.com or nolimitmediaconsulting.com.
Excellent. Any final thoughts for us?
Hey, get out there and market your business. This economy is rough. You guys should be on there. Every business in Atlanta needs to go and secure those URLs before someone else does. Secure. Go out there. Get your MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Blogger URLs to make sure no one else takes them, because this is getting competitive out there.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being our guest today. We hope our listeners will reach out and find out a little bit more about your company.
I appreciate it.
Gosh, the next guest this morning, Lee, I know you know Andy well, but I've been told he's referred to as the Tasmanian devil of networking. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Andy Greider.
Thank you very much, Amy Otto. It's very nice to be here.
Andy, you got to tell us, what's your next, your new business venture?
Well, back in July, I left the boutique firm I was with for 6 years and started my own company called Marketing Pedagogy. And sort of built it around a principle that there was a lot of noise out there in the marketplace, marketing-wise. To Nick's point, trying to leverage the social media side of things in a value-add way versus just a look at me, buy me type of way. And started to build for clients educational campaigns that were working really, really well to keep them consistently in front of folks. And then, excuse me, when it came time for them to buy, that client was top of mind. Or it came time to refer, that client was top of mind. And there was the other sort of contingent to all of it, that people pass along things they find to be of value. They're not going to pass along even coupons and things like that, they don't tend to forward. But if you send them an article that's something that all of their peers out there can benefit from, they're much more likely to hit forward or to retweet about it or whatever else the case may be. There's, you know, as Nick pointed out, there's just a plethora of channels that we work with in taking that educational campaign through those channels in a large way and teaching people to sort of position themselves online properly.
Meaning as an expert? I mean, when you talk about the educational marketing, give us an example.
Well, one basic example that plays out pretty well, there's a company I'm doing work with that is a cleaning company. And they clean common areas of condominiums and high-end apartments here in Atlanta. They have put together a program, educational program, for the residents and the owners of the places that they serve. And it's a weekly tip drip type thing on how to clean common household problems without using hazardous chemicals and keeping your house and your condo clean and green at the same time. So, again, it's a value add for them. Mm-hmm. It separates them from all the other cleaning companies out mm-hmm. there. And it allows them also to run at the bottom of the tips who the tip was sponsored by. So in 25 different tips, they can have up to 25 different sponsors who are their strategic partners, which allows them to build the sphere of influence, allows them to get the buzz going about themselves and about their partners out there to these residents.
Are your clients open to this kind of, it seems like more of a long-term perspective when it comes to marketing as opposed to, you know, historically marketing or advertising has been kind of persuasion-based, ROI-based, you know, what have you done for me lately-based?
You know, Lee, it's funny. I think that, you know, the businesses that are going to be around in 2 or 3 years are getting it. The businesses that are going to be hanging up their shingle because of the tough economic times often aren't. You know, the ones that need the quick result are usually the ones who waited to do marketing until it was way too late. And, you know, this is not a quick fix. It is not a silver bullet, but no marketing really should be. I think that it's actually a very common misconception about marketing.
So is this branding?
It is in a way. It's a whole new form of branding, though. It's an educational branding of your company. It's taking your company message, your value add, and putting it in your consumers' hands to help them position you in the marketplace. Again, back to Nick's point of in their social sort of personal space, allowing them to tell the story they have with you, position you nicely for them. You know, I had somebody tweet the other day about a program I'd put out there about becomeanexpertonline.com. It's a and you can go to it as a listener here to the show, becomeanexpertonline.com. Go in, put in your name and your email, and you'll get 8 different tips on how to position your own personal name online, which is sort of the next step of where things are headed. Yes, companies need to be branded. They need to be educated. But it's very important to actually position yourself as an expert and your personal marketing side of things and be found the right way right away.
Even if you were, like, work for a big corporation, you think that's important?
I think so. I mean, Lee, what's the one thing that stays with you forever? Unless you, you know, literally change your name.
Right.
Your cell phone number may change. The company you work for may change. Your email may change. All those things. But for people, and also for people to find you, it's very important to be found properly, not just on Facebook, not just on Twitter and things like that, but actually on the one place everyone goes, which is Google. And I help my clients with that and get them top, you know, page one positioning as well as giving them optimization of everything else out there so they can have expert content online.
So you've teased us. I'm sure you've teased our listeners. How can they get in touch with you to find out more about how they can optimize their search engine and educate their clients?
Probably the best way to get hold of me is to Google me, and that way you get to see the advice in action.
Spell your name.
Proof in the pudding. Andy, A-N-D-Y, Greider, G-R-E-I-D as in Delta, E-R. And if you just go to Google, type that in, and hit go, I'll be at the top of the page one and actually about 8 pages deep now in organic search. So and something that is doable for you. Even with common names, we can usually get pretty good traction over time. And again, it's a long-term venture.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being our guest today. You
Thank
definitely
you,
have a unique twist, and we hope our listeners will reach out and touch base with you and see what you can do to help them.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's a pleasure being here. You've got a great show.
Thank you. Our next guest, I'm so excited, Lee, because, you know, I like good news. I don't like the bad news, and he's all about the good news. He actually has a little newspaper. He's the publisher of Coffee News. He's also, very active in BNI in Atlanta, and has something to tell us about the Referral Institute of Atlanta. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Emil.
Well, it's certainly nice to be here. Learned a lot already.
Yeah, I know. A lot to learn this morning. So tell us about the Referral Institute.
Well, it's a actually a group of people that originally came out of BNI, wanted to perfect the word-of-mouth marketing. There's a lot of interest in that. A lot of people out there doing a lot of things, but the effectiveness really depends on your focus and really knowledge of some processes and systems and how to really make it work. Some of the things that we've heard here today are certainly tools that people can implement and incorporate into that word-of-mouth marketing.
Is it possible to systematize your word-of-mouth marketing?
Absolutely. In fact, that's really what I do, is help people to do that. One of my favorite quotes is a Dizzy Dean quote. When asked about the speed of one of his teammates, he said, "Well, the fella has a lot of up and down, but not much forward." And that really describes a lot of networking activity. In fact, I just put a blog post out this morning about networking, and I'm going to sound like I'm anti-networking, but I'm really anti-frenetic activity. And exactly what you said, Lee, you do need to have a system. You do need to make choices about where you're going to network and who you're going to network with and what it is you're actually trying to accomplish.
So what are some of the tips? Or this is all hush, hush.
This is secret stuff.
No, we want some hot tips. Come on, we want the real stuff.
All right, well.
What's a common mistake people make? Why don't we start there?
Yeah, I think the idea of broad versus deep. A lot of people are out collecting cards, giving cards out. First question I ask is, why are you doing that? Deep is really where I'm focusing a lot with my clients right now, and that is looking at the micro network that you work within that is the key to your success. And those are those few people that are out there that you can count on regularly. They understand your business. Their business card is in your pocket, or your card is in their pocket, and vice versa. And they're actually working for you every day as you're working for them.
So a virtual sales force for yourself.
Exactly. And you know, there's a recruitment process. I tell people it's like dating. You got to make them love you, and then they'll work for you, and vice versa again. But all these tools that we've heard about today are extremely important, because there's different levels that you have to hit the market at, with the broadcast, with the closer in, and then that micro network that are your key partners.
So you help people integrate the web with face-to-face?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I was really intrigued. I get crushed trying to read all the stuff, because it's beyond me. I'm an old guy and a straight leg infantry guy. So these guys are like they're the air wing, the high tech communicators. But great tools, and when you learn how to use those to support your activities, just like building your name brand. If people want to get in touch with me, they can Google Emil Parody, and I'm proud to say, an old troglodyte like myself, I'm on most of the first two pages you're going to hit on the Google. But that's not because of any real great knowledge on my part. It's just because of focused activity.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. I want to know more about Coffee News. It's funny. It makes me giggle.
Yeah.
It's upbeat.
That's the idea. You know, it's funny. I have a lot of people tell me that advertising, print advertising is dying, and I say, well, what are all those people going to do while they're sitting there waiting for their food to come? Somebody might break out their iPhone or something and do something, but not everybody is oriented that way, and they're likely to reach over and pick up something that takes them 10 minutes to read and get a little chuckle out of and have some good news. So I don't think Coffee News is going to go away for a while.
And Coffee News is found where?
It's found in
restaurants, I've seen it.
We like to say it's everywhere, but it's in coffee shops, restaurants, waiting rooms, those sorts of things.
How did you get into that?
It was an accident.
Was that like something you just fell into, like for fun, and then it turned into something else?
Yeah, I actually know the franchise owner, Bill Buckley, up in Bangor, Maine. My family's from Maine, and I happen to know Bill, and he was after me for years, and I had a friend that needed a job, so I helped him get into Coffee News, and then he went out, and I kept it.
So now you own Coffee News, or
well,
you own the franchise?
I just own a franchise in Marietta.
Uh-huh.
Yep. there's a bunch of us around, the little Coffee News cabal.
I bet that's fun. Do you get together?
Yeah, we regularly? Do a couple of times a year. I'll tell you the great thing about Coffee News, and I've really learned a lot about marketing and advertising and whatnot through Coffee News because it really connects me to the
right, you're
the
on
community.
The street, right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I'm talking to all the small business owners. I walk around and people go, hey, there's Mr. Coffee News, which is kind of humorous. But it also is a great connection and has reoriented my thinking about where is Main Street.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And I talk to a lot of my clients about where's your Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Every business has their own, right?
Right.
Now, what about the Referral Institute? That's franchise as well?
Yes, it is. And I'm at Referral Institute Atlanta. Referral Institute's now in about 19 countries. I actually was on a call on Monday with a guy from Dubai who's a Referral Institute franchise owner over there. We're talking about our businesses and how we're marketing. So it's a great network. I'll be going to England in October for a Referral Institute conference over there.
And how does that work? How do you engage with clients and things like that?
Primarily, I work with salespeople and small business owners who are still involved in business development in their business. And we sit down, and I try to be a little bit strategic, although I don't like to use that word with salespeople because they don't listen to you if you start
right.
using
it. Right, you can't go that way.
Is that word too big?
Yeah, they don't want to bother with that. They want tactics.
It's too ambiguous.
Yeah, they want tactics.
How are you going to help me make a sale today? That's what I want to know.
Exactly. So, but I like to start out with that. What's the concept? And integrating, again, some of these things that we've talked about. How are you going to incorporate a comprehensive marketing plan that's going to support your word of mouth?
Mm-hmm. And is that what you do primarily, or it's just a little of this, a little Coffee News, a little? No.
Referral Institute's it. I actually, the lovely and talented Miss Deborah actually is the Coffee News queen, so I just support her.
And so what's RPM Advisors?
That's just the umbrella.
Of all of your ventures?
Yeah.
So how'd you get into this franchising, like to own two franchises? What made you go that route instead of starting your own consultancy?
Well, I actually was at the formative stages of Referral Institute and helped to develop some of the early materials and so forth. Dr. Ivan Meisner and some other people out of the BNI community worked together to do that. So I happened to be a part of that. So I actually kind of got sucked into the Borg.
Uh-huh. So then you had to do it.
Yes.
I think there's a lot more to know about Emil.
I think
our listeners need to check out his website, Google him, and reach out to Emil and find out more about your
company's
ventures.
What's the best place to find you?
ReferralInstituteAtlanta.com. We tried to make it as long as we could.
Good.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today, all of our guests. Wonderful show. We're out of time, Lee.
I know. This was a marathon show.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Okay. Great guest, great show, right?
Yes. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto. Have a wonderful week.